I'm very happy now to welcome back to the program Janice Quinn. She is Executive Director of CASA. CASA stands for Court-Appointed Special Advocates here in New Mexico, in what, the First Judicial District of New Mexico?
Yes, that's the Santa Fe, Los Alamos, and Rio Riba County area.
Okay, well, it's great to... It's been years since you've been
here.
I
know, nice to see you again.
It's nice to see you again, and you are actually retiring from having done this for quite a long time.
I am. I began with CASA in September of 2003 and became the executive director in May of 2005. So my R day is June 1st.
Okay.
And
coming right up.
Coming right up, yes.
So let's talk about CASA for a moment and what it does. You basically represent children in the foster care system.
Right. Our mission is to train community volunteers to advocate for kids who have been abused or neglected. And the state has decided they're no longer able to stay at home safely, so they remove them from their parents and put them in foster care. And then the parents have to go through a court process to prove that they can actually provide a safe home for the kids before they can get them back.
And so in this process, children, I mean, anybody would be vulnerable in that kind of a court process, including parents, but children are the most vulnerable, and they don't always have an advocate.
Right, they don't always have an advocate. Although, in our program here, I'm really proud to say that we've been able to serve 100% of the kids coming into the system in our district for several years now.
That's amazing.
That wasn't always the case.
So what are some of the kinds of circumstances that these kids find themselves in? I mean, are we talking about everything from infancy to 17 and a half years old?
0 to 18. If a child is born with drugs in their system, then the state removes the child immediately from the hospital, and they enter the foster care system.
Do they drug test infants?
They do.
They take their blood when they're born?
They do.
Good heavens.
Yeah. And it's probably a really good thing. I mean, I can go both ways on that, but I think it's really a good thing, because if you don't know that the child has got methadone or cocaine in its system and is having breathing problems, I mean, it's part of the health check of the newborn.
Right, right.
So then they can get the treatment that they need immediately, and they have a good chance of coming out of it, you know, of being a healthy infant after that. But the reason that kids get removed can be anything from neglect, which is the most, probably like 70%, and that can be medical neglect, emotional neglect, physical neglect, you know, not enough food in the house, not getting the kiddo to school, kids running around at 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's in January, and mom's passed out on the couch, physical abuse, sexual abuse, which is a small percentage. But parents find themselves in situations where they cannot take care of or will not take care of their children properly.
And what does that usually do to them? How much of it is substance abuse? How much of it is tremendous overwork? I mean, what's going on?
It's a lot of substance abuse, poverty. You know, the economics of the situation right now are not good and haven't been for several years, and that impacts everybody. Sometimes it's multi-generational drug abuse. It can be a lot of factors. There's mental illness involved, a lot of different factors, and there's a lot of single moms. So there's a
right.
lot of single parent homes that these kids come from.
So when you have kids who are then taken out of those homes and put in a foster system, it's also anybody's guess how well off they'll be there.
Well, the foster system goes, the foster homes and the parents who are stepping forward to do that work, in my mind, are angels. They go through quite a training process and a vetting process. But as good as they can be, it's still traumatic on the kids, because sometimes siblings can't stay together. We've got a case right now where there are 3 siblings in one home, 2 in another, and a 6th in a third home. They move schools, so they lose school credits. They maybe have to leave pets behind. They leave friends behind. So even if they were going to a perfect place, it's still traumatic for them.
And so you must, I'm sure there are all kinds of studies about the vulnerabilities of those kids in terms of their school grades, their high school graduation, and the outcomes after they turn 18.
Yes, and they're bleak. They're really bleak. Within 2 years, 50% of those kids will probably have been arrested. There's a lot of unwanted pregnancies, parents being parents before they're 20 years old after they age out of the system. Lots of them couch surf. They don't have a big support system. Aging out at 18 is really traumatic for kids, the ones who don't have a home to go back to.
And then those children of teenagers might end up in the system 10 years later or 5 years later.
They do. They do. We've seen third generations in the 9 years I've been with CASA.
Good heavens.
I know. That's the heartbreaker. That's where you want to just sit back and figure out, where can we stop this cycle?
Yeah. You know? What have you figured out?
We haven't. I think education, making the public aware, community aware. You know, it takes one person in a child's life to really turn that child's life around. So if people understand that they can step forward in a volunteer manner, no matter whether it's Big Brothers Big Sisters, working with CASA, in a church group, whatever it is, if they can be there for a child who's in need, they can make that child's life better.
And it's sort of a recurring theme. I keep coming up on this in my radio work and off the air as well, is that it's relationships that make the world go round, right? More than money, more than infrastructure, more than anything. I mean, that amount of love and connection that is created between two people changes lives.
It does. And, you know, kids in the foster care system, they may go through two or three homes in a year. We have one young girl, she's a young woman now. She's 21 years old. She was in 12 different foster homes. I don't know how many schools. You know, that kind of inconsistency makes the rest of your life look very unstable, and you lose a lot of trust. So if you can have one consistent adult in that child's life, even though they may change schools and foster homes and social workers, that gives them that kind of homing point. You know, there's somebody there for them all the time throughout that time period, which is really important.
And CASA, of course, is always looking for volunteers.
Always, I would say always, except that the fact that we are serving all the kids in our district right now means that we have CASAs waiting for kids rather than the other way around.
Is that right?
And that's due to several different factors. Children, Youth, and Families Department is really putting a lot of energy into in-home services, which means they're trying not to remove the kids from their home. They're trying to help the parents deal with their problems because they know how traumatic it is for the kids to be taken from their homes. So by the time they do come into the system, and there's less of them right now than there used to be, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, but by the time they do get removed from their homes after everything else has been tried, they're really pretty severely hurt.
We're talking to Janice Quinn, Executive Director of Court-Appointed Special Advocates. And how did you get into this work?
I don't know, just luck. Actually, it was my husband. He came home one day and he said, I'm going to volunteer to advocate for abused children. And I went, okay, you look like my husband, but this is something new for you. And it was the first time I had heard about CASA, which is crazy because CASA was started in 1977 in Seattle. And today there are over 10,000 programs and 70,000 volunteers. So with him taking his first case and me learning all about it, I just was enthralled. I was just amazed at the impact it had on kids' lives. And a position came available, and I applied for it. And a year and a half later, I was the executive director. So
you moved into nonprofit work. Of course, there are so many nonprofits here in Santa Fe.
Right. Yeah, I came from a technology background, business development, sales, marketing training, and knew that I wanted to do something that, you know, made a lasting impact, which I feel very fortunate to have found CASA to be able to do that. But it was quite a difference coming from a business world into the nonprofit world.
What are some of the differences?
Well, you can, and I'm just going to say this broadly, you can be very successful in your business and not have a passion for it. It can involve your head and not your heart. I don't think you can do nonprofit work without it involving your heart first. But it's also a business, so you have to have a business head to be able to run a good nonprofit organization.
Right.
You know, you have to stay afloat. You have to run it just like a business. But the passion and the heart and the belief that you're making a difference for the future is what you need every night to be able to sleep, especially when you're dealing with abused children.
I can't even imagine it. I mean, it must be in some ways so depressing and demoralizing at certain times.
It is. And, you know, there's several tricks Trauma stewardship is one of them, learning how to take care of yourself, but then just reminding yourself that every little thing that you do really does make an impact on a child. Children don't forget. They don't forget kindnesses. They don't forget hurts. But if you're the one giving the kindness and you're there for that child and you don't give up and you show up, then you know you're making a difference. And the national studies show that kids with in the foster system that have a CASA by their side spend half the time in foster care as the other kids do. They're 50% more assured of not coming back into the system, not bouncing back in again. And they get better services because the CASA is concentrating on one or two kids, and so they know their needs, education, emotional, medical, fun stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So they get to advocate for that.
Big Brothers Big Sisters is a program we've had on the air many times over the years, and basically a big takes time out of their week to spend some time with a little brother or sister. What about the CASA relationship? Do they get to spend just, you know, quality time together?
It's quality time, but it's not like a big brother, big sister situation. You're a court advocate appointed by a judge, sworn into an oath of confidentiality. You make written court reports with recommendations, you know, for what you think should happen for in the best interest of this child. You go to provider meetings. You meet with the social workers. You stay on top of the case and make sure that what's supposed to be done for the child is being done for it. So it carries a big responsibility. It's also not a thing where you take the kiddo over to your house and it's a weekend sleepover, or you're going to, you know, go out to eat someplace. It's a much different relationship.
Do you have sometimes a situation where a volunteer would like to become more of a mother or father figure or big brother kind of big sister relationship, but
sure,
they're not allowed to by the boundaries of their contract, so to speak?
All the time. And, you know, those types of tight relationships I totally support, as long as they're within the boundaries of what CASA's guidelines are. And when the court case is over, so many of our volunteers stay in touch with the families, whether it be the original biological family or the adoptive family, and the kids, because the kids and the families want them in their lives. So they're unofficial at that point, but they have become a member of that child's circle.
Janice Quinn, so having done this, now being at a place where you're about to retire and having perhaps some wisdom to share with us, what would you like to... What have you learned in your position at CASA, being executive director?
One of the biggest things I've learned is that Santa Fe's got 900 nonprofits, right? That's the bad side and that's the good side. Everybody's competing for funding. You know, it's tough out there. But there are so many incredible executive directors and board members and staff members that are willing to sit down and brainstorm ideas and figure out how to collaborate to get the solutions that we can all see, but we can't reach by ourselves.
Right.
So CASA's done a lot of collaborating with public and private, galleries, business owners, children, youth, and families, other nonprofits, to see a need and to make it happen for the kids. And I think Santa Fe Community Foundation in offering executive director circles and peer networking is really instrumental in bringing us all together, because when we come together, we fire off of each other.
Yeah.
And things happen. It's really great.
Do you think there's redundancy in the nonprofit world, people serving the same, not markets, but constituencies?
I think there is. I think everybody does something just a little bit different, but there is some overlap. And I have this dream of this kind of timeline where a 0 to 18 or a 0 to 21 is the age, and then you would see every nonprofit in town, where they fit, which age group, and which type of services they give. So we could all look at it and go, oh, look at that. We don't have anything for the 5 to 7-year-olds in this service.
Oh, interesting.
Arena. But we all do a little bit of the same thing, although I have to say CASA is unique because nobody else is even allowed in the courtroom. We're the only
right.
court-appointed nonprofit allowed to have access to these kids.
So what are you going to do when you retire?
I'm going to not be a neglectful orchard owner and vineyard owner, and I'm going to prune my grapes, and I'm going to make quilts for foster kids, and I'm going to see my grandson, and I'm planning my dad's 90th birthday in Texas in July.
Wow.
I'm going to rest a little bit.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you will be very much missed, but I guess CASA will also be hiring a new executive director soon, and we hope to get that person on the air maybe later this year or next year.
I think that would be great. Yeah, there's some really wonderful candidates, and CASA is going to be in great hands, and I'm looking forward to watching them grow and prosper, and I just hope that that everybody who's supported CASA in the past continues to do so.
Janice Quinn is the executive director of CASA, court-appointed special advocates. They're on the web at casafirst.org. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte.